Welcome to Legal Talk, a monthly conversation about the American legal system with Minnesota Supreme Court Associate Justice Gordon Moore. Good morning, Justice Moore. How are you?
Morning, Rich. Morning, listeners. Fresh morning out there today.
Yeah, well, very crisp.
Crisp and fresh. But according to Paul Douglas, maybe the last week of this icebox weather for the winter. I don't know. We'll see.
Things shift dramatically this weekend. I know that. So.
Yeah.
And if you believe the extended forecasts, spring arrives on March 1st.
That's the meteorological spring?
That is meteorological spring, but like it shifts from even like late winter, like normal temperatures to early spring temperatures. Even.
Right.
So that's nice.
Yeah. And sun angles are getting higher.
Yep.
You can get that sense, and it's not as dark when you come home at night. So
that's the big one.
That's always a good thing.
Yeah.
Safety and, you know, for kids and buses and teams coming back from meets, it's nice to not have to show up in the dark all the time.
But I have to believe for a guy like you, I mean, you're leaving when it's dark, you're coming home when it's dark.
Well, on court days, oftentimes,
yeah.
In January, we had a lot of that with the cases that involved the organization of the House of Representatives. There were a lot of days that were long.
We had briefing
schedules, and then I wish there was a program that could just sort of do the, you know, remember on Star Trek, if you're a Trekkie, Spock had that trick called the Vulcan mind meld where he could just put his hand up and just everything would come in.
Yes.
And there were days where I thought, boy, wouldn't that be nice? I could just put my hand on this stack of briefs and understand everything. All the information would come there. But
I would settle for a transporter.
Yeah, I like the transporter too. That was very, very good. But So
what's been going on since the last time we spoke with you? What's happened with the court?
Well, we had our three election cases that were the big ones, and the last one ended up getting mooted out because of the agreement that Speaker Damoth and Representative Hortman reached in terms of organizing the legislature, and that basically, in the legal parlance, mooted out the last case. Although we did hear oral arguments on it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we did.
Okay,
that was a challenge to Speaker Steve, not Speaker. Freudian slip there. Secretary of State Steve Simon's exercise of his authority to organize the House as part of his duties under the law. Fortunately, that got resolved. We didn't have to issue an opinion on that. We issued opinions on the question of what a quorum means for purposes of the State House of Representatives and the Senate. And also, we issued a order on the special election for the House seat in Roseville. 40B, that's the seat that there was an election contest in district court that wasn't appealed, and the person who was elected advised the governor that he was quote-unquote resigning his seat, even though he actually never took the seat. And so that embroiled the court in a lot of work. And so both of those orders were issued. Opinions are still to follow on the election case involving 40B, the special election declaration by the governor, and then the question of what a quorum is. And so we issued an order with opinion to follow. Mm-hmm. And so what's going to happen is very soon there'll be an explanation of what the court felt about those cases. And I think our order actually got into it a little bit. We didn't just say, granted or denied, order opinion to follow. There was some substance in there. But that was a lot of January. We did not get an appeal from the Shakopee election contest that was filed involving Representative Brad Tabke's very close victory there, and the question of some ballots that were destroyed inadvertently. That case, the losing candidate there did not appeal, and Mr. Johnson, the losing candidate in the Roseville case, the 40BC, did not appeal either, and so we didn't have to issue decisions on either of those issues. There are some matters that are still percolating. There have been some petitions to recall certain members of the legislature on both sides.
My goodness.
And yeah, that's out there. I don't know where that goes. I mean, the Chief Justice in the first instance looks at those, and there's a statutory process for her to decide whether or not there's a need for a hearing on those things. The full court doesn't get involved until later in those processes, and so we're not currently dealing with any of those. Meanwhile, we are gearing up for the March calendar. February tends to be a little slower month, thankfully, for the court. It's sort of that midpoint of our term. Law clerks are trying to get caught up on work. Court's trying to get caught up on work. And we have some members trying to get away for a little vacation, which is has been challenging, and we do have some members that are out, which is good for them and good for the court, just to have some time to recharge batteries.
Right.
So I would say it's a little bit of a lull time. President's Day weekend tends to be a little bit that way, but it'll pick up quickly. And I've warned my law clerks that once you get into spring, you know, March, April, you're running downhill for the rest of the term, because we really strive to try to get as many of our cases out from the term as possible. And it's practically really helpful to have the law clerks that are working on those cases around when those cases are ready to be issued. That's our aspirational goal. That's not always an achieved goal. It's just the reality of how things are. Some cases just take longer than others. But we're plunging forward and filling a bunch of judicial vacancies, too. We've got six vacancies pending right now in the district courts. One created by a real sad situation in Ramsey County. Listeners may have heard, or if you haven't heard, Judge Patrick Diamond, a longtime district court judge and colleague of mine in the 2nd District, died last weekend after suffering a heart attack, at a fitness facility. And Pat, his Caring Bridge site told the story. He had been on a life support system, and his family decided to discontinue the treatment. And that really was a hard blow. Pat Diamond is one of the best and brightest of our judges. He was just a brilliant guy. I got to meet Pat first when he was Mike Freeman's chief deputy in the Hennepin County Attorney's Office when I was county attorney. Pat Diamond was the guy that you looked up to when you had a hard case, when you had a hard problem. He was the person, the law professor, and he had kind of that law professor demeanor, little gruff exterior, but inside a real compassionate heart for people. And really, I heard that last Monday in Ramsey County, it was a really hard day for courts and staff there. That was news that nobody wanted to hear. So unfortunately, there's a vacancy that will be filled at some point down the road in the 2nd District, Ramsey County. We have three coming up in the 4th District in Hennepin, one in Crow Wing County, and then longtime district court judge in the 1st District in Hastings, David Knudsen from Lakeville, who's a friend and colleague of mine on the, not only the court, but on the Sentencing Guidelines Commission. Judge Knudsen has announced his retirement for July, and he's just an outstanding judge, and we're gonna miss his leadership and wisdom. He's been part of our judicial council and has been called upon for a lot of different roles in the system, so he's going to be moving on to bigger and better things in July. So, you know, that process, Rich, we've talked about the churn of judicial vacancies and openings. It's kind of always going, ebbs and flows a little bit. Two new judges in my former district, the 5th District, that are going to be sworn in March, one down in Pipestone County and the other in Nicollet County. I'm hoping to get to both of those, so that'll be exciting to see some of my former colleagues down there.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, the work goes on. The courts, you know, we all realize we're, you know, temporary placeholders for permanent positions in a system that exists. And, you know, it's when people like Pat aren't around, it just, it's a real moment of reflection, I think, for a lot of us, of his vintage. Pat and I went to new judge school called Baby Judge School the same year. You know, he was a leader in that group and just an overall fantastic person. My condolences go out to his family and to his immediate friends and colleagues that have been standing with him. And, you know, there's going to be a celebration of his life coming down the road in St. Paul, and we'll gather and be able to say some good things about Pat Diamond. But as far as the work at the court, it just kind of goes on. You know, we do our cases, and we've got opinions going on, and occasionally I get to help Jimmy LaRue broadcast a hockey game to break things up a little bit, which is always...
You've been doing great work this season,
too. Oh, it's so much fun. I saw the Northfield Raiders got the number one seed in Section 1A, which we predicted, and I think we had it pretty well nailed on Saturday afternoon in terms of who their first-round game will be against. It'll be against either La Crescent and Hoka or Red Wing. I think they're the 8-9 game. Looking forward to that on Thursday, right?
Yeah. Thursday at, we think, 7:00.
Yeah, that will be fun. That team has been a joy to watch all year. They're, you know, they had a little tough one Saturday afternoon. Some days the calls don't go your way, and adversity comes, and Delna took advantage of every opportunity they had.
They did.
5-on-5, it was a totally equal game, totally even, Steven. In fact, if anything, Northfield had the better of the play a lot of the time.
The whole thing fell apart when it went to a 5-on-3 situation and in favor of Delano, and that was the end of it.
But also enjoyed last night. Rich, did you see any of the SNL 50?
I did.
That was fun. I'll tell you, the start and the end, the opener with Paul Simon and Sabrina Carpenter singing Homeward Bound, and then Paul McCartney singing the Golden Slumbers medley from
pretty
Abbey
fun.
Road, that was pretty epic.
That's pretty fun.
I mean, those two are two just incredible legends.
Right.
And lots of memories in those sketches. There were a few that I wanted to see that didn't come back.
Yeah.
I mean, there's just too much out there and too little time.
I was disappointed that that Dan Aykroyd wasn't there, because I was really hoping for a little Wild and Crazy Guys.
Yes. You know? Yeah, with Steve Martin. Yes.
That would have been fun.
Yes. What were those guys? As Yortek and Ed.
And Georg.
Those guys.
Czech Brothers, yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was good that SNL sort of made fun of itself a little bit. Mm-hmm. I mean, they did look back at some of the sort of cringeworthy moments of humor.
that
I mean, you
sketches
know.
Sketches that have not aged well.
No, they have not. They have not. I would have liked to have seen a little bit more Mike Myers. I just, for some reason, I found his stuff, you know, like, you know, Sprockets and...
Dana Carvey was not... I mean, he was there, but he was not used hardly at all.
No, where was Wayne's World?
What's the other one that he used to
Church do? Chat?
Church Lady, yes.
Yeah, Church Chat. I just love the Church Chat. Debbie Downer did make an appearance with Robert De Niro.
Yeah, I could have done without Debbie Downer. Yeah.
Gives the trombonist a chance to, you know,
exactly
show his or her lips there. But yeah, it was fun. I didn't see it all, but good thing YouTube's out there to see.
Yeah, I did catch all of it, and I watched the concert on Friday night as well, which was really fun. Also, I didn't realize how much I absolutely love Saturday Night Live until this weekend.
Yeah,
I mean, I've always been a fan. I DVR it every weekend, but it was like, oh man, no, this really does mean a lot to me.
Well, Rich, you and I are old enough to remember a time, you know, pre-internet, pre-cell phone, where. Yep. You know, people actually watched the same programs on television and talked about them. And SNL, oh my gosh, when that came out in the 70s, the late 70s, every Monday.
It was a talker.
It was the talker.
Yeah.
Everybody was talking about it or reenacting the sketches. Remember the John Belushi and the samurai, chef, the samurai, whatever.
Samurai delicatessen.
Yes, delicatessen, or the chibuga.
Oh my gosh,
the old place in Chicago that they were imitating. dating. Yeah. I mean, the list goes on and on and on.
It does.
And it's, yeah. And I, you know, probably like you, I mean, there have been times of SNL where I've been more connected and less connected, you know, depending on which cast group was there. But yeah, I thought Adam Sandler's song was kind of very poignant last night.
It was really sweet. It was
a little, you know, Adam's, you know, I remember the wedding singer. I mean, he's funny doing music, but it was very poignant. Yeah, yeah. It was really, you know, a very sincere. Yeah, lots of great memories and you know, craziness. I mean, Will Ferrell, Eddie Murphy. I mean, it's just...
It was great to see Eddie. That Eddie Murphy-Tracy Morgan thing was just... That might have been the funniest point of the whole
That was evening. Hilarious. Yeah. Yeah, and that Scared Straight sketch. That just pushes... That pushes right up to the edge.
It did. It really did.
Right up to the edge.
All right. Well, okay, coming back to some more serious stuff. You got a hold of me earlier this week and said we should maybe talk about the rule of law today, and I thought that was a great idea. So how do you want to approach this?
Well, it's such a broad topic, Rich, that it's you know, I mean, it's one of those things where the rule of law, I mean, we could have, you know, a law school course dedicated to, you know, what the rule of law is.
Yeah.
And I think what we should do maybe is talk about some general principles here, and then we could maybe, if necessary, in a later episode, drill down a little bit.
Okay, sure.
I think it's very important that the discussion, as much as possible, be pulled away from the current political environment, because if you've been listening and watching, and if you're a follower of events, you've heard references to pending constitutional crises and certain people, are they not going to follow rules of the court? I think, however, generally speaking, the rule of law is something that is a little bit... I'm challenged right now in some respects. I mean, from the standpoint of some of the norms and the institutions that, you know, I think we've traditionally assumed are going to be a certain way, and they're not anymore. And so you wonder how the, you know, the foundation of our constitutional system that, you know, we're talking, you know, off air about, you know, the Magna Carta and some of the founding principles that governed the founders of our country in terms of the creation of the Constitution. And all of our, you know, when judges are sworn in and executive branch officials and legislators, you know, they take an oath to support and defend the Constitution from, in the president's case, from all enemies, foreign and domestic. And so, you know, what is the rule of law, and why should people care about that? And I think that's the thing that that worries me a lot, because when societies have gone into totalitarianism, either way, I mean, right wing or left wing, it's generally been because the populace has become complacent and has stopped caring and focusing on economic issues or personal matters, and stop worrying about how the law is treating other people or how, you know, the country is acting. And so, you know, the rule of law, just, you know, generally spoken, is a political and legal ideal. And basically, in its purest form, it means that all people and institutions are subject to the same laws. And it's basically a set of principles that ensures a society is orderly and just.
Yeah.
So what type of principles are part of the rule of law? Well, there are a number of them. Equality. You know, this is a premise of the rule of law. Everybody's treated equally under the law. I mean, that's, you know, despite the fact that our country was founded by people that owned enslaved people, I mean, the principles of the rule of law is that everybody is treated equally under the law. Accountability, critical part of the rule of law. Everyone's held accountable to the same laws. In other words, we don't have a different set of rules for, you know, certain people that have certain amounts of money or certain types of political power. In theory, the accountability is supposed to apply all around. Fairness. The rule of law embodies principles of fairness, meaning there are clear and fair processes for enforcing laws that everybody, you know, is aware of. And, you know, the due process rights give people, you know, a procedural and substantive fairness in terms of how their cases are handled and their opportunity to defend themselves and, you know, to have a neutral person or body determining the result of the case. Independence, this is really important, that there be an independent judiciary that's not under the control of the government in a sense of, you know, state-controlled judiciary. You know, you look at where Russia is right now, for example, you know, there's no independence there.
Right.
You issue a ruling that goes against, you know, the ruling doctrine, and you're likely to find yourself falling out of a window someplace.
The Prime Minister of Israel is under indictment for trying to create that same sort of situation in that country. And frankly, the only reason he hasn't been tried is because he's the prime minister.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so in the crisis in Israel was about reforms to the Israeli Supreme Court and the ability of the court to have a say about what the prime minister was doing.
Right.
That set off some of that controversy. Another principle of the rule of law, human rights. Human rights are guaranteed for all. I mean, that's sort of embodied in, you know, the Declaration of Independence and in our Constitution about what human rights are and how they should be guaranteed. Transparency. Laws are publicly promulgated. Now, that means that they are published and everybody should have the opportunity to be advised in advance of what conduct is or isn't going to be allowed, that we don't have what are called ex post facto laws, which apply sort of after the fact, where, you know, well, now that you did this, we're going to decree it illegal and, you know, punish you accordingly.
Yeah.
And then consistency. Laws are consistent with human rights norms and standards. And, you know, the rule of law basically, Rich, protects basic rights and prevents the arbitrary use of power. And it provides for consistency. So business, people have an understanding of, you know, what the rules of the game are and how the world is run and how it's operated. And, you know, the danger, if the rule of law becomes subject to question, is suddenly all those settled expectations are up in the air. Yep. If, you know, if tomorrow a court can just jettison 60 years of precedent because, yeah, we just don't like that anymore. I mean, that breeds, you know, frankly, contempt for the court as an institution. And so, you know, ideally, under the rule of law, the principles and ideals that are embodied there ensure an orderly and just society. And, you know, unfortunately, the phrase the rule of law kind of is used a little bit by persons who have a political agenda to attack the other side as supposedly not following the rule of law, and then people speculating about whether certain candidates or certain parties are going to obey court orders and are going to follow through with those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we are right now in a position where there are a lot of norms that are being challenged.
Yes.
They just are. New administration coming in with a different agenda. I want to emphasize that, you know, I've heard some people claim that it's lawless for in a new administration to push forward a different agenda. And I would push back on that. I mean, every administration has its own principles that it was elected on and an agenda that it wishes to push. And a lot of these, you know, objections, it's frankly the principle of whose ox is being gored.
Right.
I mean, who's you know, are we, as Dan Barrero likes to say, are we sharks or jets? Are we shirts or skins?
Yeah.
And so we're going to look at everything through that lens. And that's not how it should work. I mean, cases and controversies generally come from a oftentimes exercise of authority in a way that maybe is objected to.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance, the first case that looks like it's getting to the U.S. Supreme Court involves a executive action in terms of termination of a particular person with an agency. And that that case, you know, a lower court enjoined that termination decision, and the current administration wants that reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
And so just because the administration has a view of executive power that others disagree with, that doesn't make it lawless. The concern, however, is in the final analysis, are court orders going to be followed? And are parties and people going to respect the courts and respect the authority of the courts that by the structure of the system don't have, you know, authority to there is authority to enforce orders through the contempt process, but you know there aren't armies that can be called forward. The courts rely on the good faith and trustworthiness of executive branch entities to enforce laws. We don't have the judiciary doesn't have the power of the purse, and that's the, in theory at least that's the legislature. Right. And that's a whole other discussion in terms of you know who is the authority to you know make decisions on spending right now, but. You know, I think it's important for people as they're listening to arguments about the rule of law to understand that it's fine for people to have different interpretations of what the law means. Mm-hmm. And it's not lawless for people to have strongly held views on both sides of it. The lawlessness gets to, you know, the question of are we going to have, you know, a Napoleon Bonaparte type situation yeah. where, you know, I am the law and anything that I say is automatically right. And mm-hmm. and I don't have to listen to, you know, courts that disagree.
Right.
If we get to that point, that's a whole nother world of concern.
When it comes to enforcing a court judgment or, you know, a judicial decree, where does law enforcement fall there? I mean, what is the responsibility of law enforcement?
Well, for instance, there are contempt authorities that courts have mm-hmm. to enforce orders that aren't being followed through. For instance, if you are a child support obligor, you owe child support, and you willfully and intentionally refuse to comply with an order to pay child support, you have a right to have a hearing on a what's called a contempt procedure, mm-hmm. procedure where, you know, you have to show that you don't have the ability to comply with the order. I mean, we don't have debtors' prisons in the United mm-hmm. States. But if the court disagrees with you and finds that you have the ability to pay and you are intentionally and knowingly refusing to pay out of, you know, contempt for the process, then in theory, you could be committed to the custody of the local sheriff for a period of time as part of a contempt sanction. And there, you know, the courts obviously are requiring the assistance of a local sheriff to comply with that.
Mm-hmm.
And every judgment a court issues, oftentimes, you know, in criminal cases, there's some a component of it that has to be implemented by somebody else, whether it's a probation agent, a sheriff, and overall, I think it's important that, you know, the checks and balances within each of the three branches be maintained. Courts have to stay in their lanes. I mm-hmm. mean, the it's not the court's job to say, you know, to enact laws mm-hmm. or to write laws. That's the job of the legislature. The executive branch has the right and duty to enforce the law and to, you know, faithfully execute it. It is, however, as Chief Justice John Marshall famously said, it's the province of the judiciary to say what the law means mm-hmm. and to interpret the Constitution, states and federal constitutions. And that is where, you know, the primacy of the court's determination of what the law means comes into play in the three-part checks and balances of government. And so, for instance, in 1974, when the United States Supreme Court said unanimously that Richard Nixon had to turn over the tapes that were in his possession that he had made in the Oval Office, recording conversations with people related to the Watergate investigation, there was a claim of executive privilege there. The Supreme Court disagreed with that, mm-hmm. and unanimously the court said, no, that those have to be turned over. And President Nixon complied, and the rest of that is history.
Except for like 20 minutes.
Yeah, there was a gap, wasn't there, yeah. that wasn't ever yeah. explained. But yeah, I mean, you know, but the enforcement of laws is a tricky thing. I mean, people talk about Brown versus Board of Education mm-hmm. in 1954 desegregating the school systems yeah. in the country. Well, the truth is a little different than that.
Yeah.
The United States Supreme Court issued its decree on that, but it took people like John Kennedy and Lyndon Johnson to, you know, send troops. I think Dwight Eisenhower sent troops, National Guard troops, to enforce desegregation in certain parts of our southern states. The Civil Rights Acts of the early 60s, early mid-60s were passed as part of that. And it was a long process. I'm not an expert on this, but, you know, I think if there were people here that, you know, were familiar with the path of desegregation of public schools in the United States, would say there's still areas of this country where, you know, there's what we call de facto segregation,
sure,
meaning it's not by law, it's by kind of the way things are.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean, Brown versus Board, 1954, the Civil Rights era, the 60s, into the 70s. I mean, it's a long process. These changes aren't enacted overnight. It's really important to me, though, that people care about this issue, because if we get to a point where you have an actor, and I'm not saying who, it could be any actor, state or federal, is choosing to not follow the law, then that's a problem. That's a problem. And not following a court order related to that is a serious problem.
Yeah.
If ignoring court orders puts us down a path where we don't want to go.
And right.
That's what I think I'm concerned about the most right now, is that I do not want to see our society become subject to the whims of you know, particular people that are happen to be in power at any given time.
Right.
You know, the rule of law is supposed to protect minority rights.
Yeah.
I mean, minority interests. The judiciary has enforced laws that have not been popular. I mean, the civil rights laws, there are a lot of laws in this country that have you know, been opposed by politicians of all stripes.
Yeah.
And this, you know, that's an ongoing concern. So I think in following months, Rich, we can, you know, talk more specifically about this, but I thought we could at least tee up this discussion for, you know, general thought process. Again, I want to make it clear, this is not party or person affiliated. In fact, it might be helpful for people to think about the roles being reversed here, and on the U.S. political scene. And what if, you know, a Democratic president had come in, and, you know, what kind of arguments would be made if that person were doing things similar to what's happening with the current administration?
Absolutely.
That's what this is really all about.
Right.
It's more of a federal issue than a state issue.
Right.
I mean, I think we had an example, frankly, on the state level of the when we decided the quorum case, the Supreme Court decided the quorum case, the process for that was this proceeding called a writ of quo warranto. And out of deference to the parties, we actually didn't issue the writ. We made a statement in the order that we assume the parties will conform to the statements and the opinion.
Sure.
And they did.
Yeah.
And they did. And that, you know, and that's the sort of confidence that makes things work.
Yeah. The two major, I think, points of this show, the reason you come in and talk to us once a month, is A, we want to know what's going on with the Supreme Court and, you know, how everything is going. But it's also to take advantage of the fact that as you know, you're a Northfielder, but you've got a great legal mind, and to help people understand what the law says and how that affects everybody. So I mean, I when you said let's talk about the rule of law, I didn't take it as something that would be pointed toward anything happening right now, but I do think it's something I've been thinking about for a while, and I'm really glad we got to this.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this has been sort of high level at this point. I mean, and part of it is that given my current position, I have to be very careful because I can't be making statements or promises regarding any issue that could potentially come to before our court, and I'm not. But there, I mean, this is the stuff that classes are made out of at law schools. Steve Poskanser at Carleton College teaches classes on constitutional law and the law in the courts. And, you know, I think I'm sure St. Olaf College, similar types of political science curriculum. I mean, this is the need for public civics education and understanding of how our country runs and the law is never more important than it is right now, frankly.
And I agree.
I, as much as I understand and appreciate STEM classes and classes on computer science and, you know, the development of technology, artificial intelligence, obviously critically important. Our citizens, starting with our, you know, students and all up through adults, need to have an understanding of how our society is structured with regard to its governance and the three-part structure of our system right now and why that's important to preserve.
It's the responsibility of every American to understand this stuff. And it is, there's room for everything to be, for all the stuff to be taught in school, science, math, and civics. And we've gotten away from civics a little bit. And I'm, you know, the legislature has made some action in that direction lately. And so civics are more required than they have been before. But it's been a while, and so it's probably part of the reason we're looking at the kind of situation today that we have. But that's just me.
Yeah, well, I'd encourage people to go see the musical Hamilton. It could be a little bit of a
that's
good
great.
Primer on the
absolutely
on the importance of the structure of our government, the battle between the Jeffersonians and the Federalists that started our society.
Never has an economics lesson been so entertaining.
Yes.
Indeed.
Yes, and it was good to see Lin-Manuel out there
last
night, too.
There
was a cameo there that was really
that
really
was pretty
fantastic.
Fun.
But we will we'll talk more about this, Rich, in coming months, and we can chat more. And if listeners have particular questions or comments, they can certainly contact you,
yep.
and we can see if we could tailor the discussion to this. There's so much here. I mean, you could have a colloquium here that could be, frankly, days long discussing this project. So we're scratching the surface here, but it's important for everybody to take heed and to understand and to be vigilant and to be, to be listening with discerning intent with regard to statements that are made on all sides of things. And I would encourage people in moments of frustration to not react to necessarily what's said, the sort of bright, shiny objects that are thrown out there on social media and other places, but to focus on what actually happens, because that's what matters.
Yep.
Rhetoric is rhetoric. The politics are politics. Follow the bouncing ball and watch to see what actually happens with regard to the courts and the executive branch and the legislative branch.
Indeed.
And, and keep... there's all sorts of fantastic podcasts out there. There's a lot of news coverage and a lot of different ways you can listen. But people should be, if possible, subscribing to YouTube channels with their representatives and their senators, where they can get information. And that goes with state politics as well.
Indeed.
Coming up here.
Absolutely. Justice Moore, is there anything else you would like to discuss this month?
I don't think so. I was going to talk a little bit about our March cases, but I don't think we've got enough time for that right now. So I think we'll pass on that, and we'll get back into it in March, and we can talk a little bit about the calendar. We have some interesting things that are on the docket, but I think we probably have done enough for today and got our sports and SNL
absolutely.
Fix in as well. So congratulations. Congratulations to all the athletes for this year tournament time and for KYMN for covering it.
It's nice to know that people on the court are so well rounded and it's not just all legal stuff all the time.
Oh, it can't be.
Yeah.
I mean, it can't be. It's got to be. Yeah, I mean, you have to have things that inspire you and art, music, sometimes sports.
Yeah.
The Twins going to spring training. I mean, you know, there's always the possibility, Rich, of another miracle.
I can make the case. It's a lot of ifs, but I can make the case.
Yes, we'll see what McNiff has to say about that. Hopefully,
McNiff is never going to get over the fact that Rocco Baldelli is the manager. So that's that.
Yeah.
They could win the World Series, and it would be despite the fact that Rocco Baldelli is
manager. He's bullish on the Twins, I'll just say it.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, Rocco is very bullish. So, well, Rich, it's always good to be here, and thanks to you for carrying this show and for our listeners who pay attention.
Thanks to you for taking the time to do this, Justice Moore. We always, always appreciate your time. Folks, Justice Moore will be back third Monday of March.